As our economy slowly tries to recover amid COVID, the September jobs figures show that working mothers and Black Americans are falling further behind. We're digging into the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Labor force participation figures here. 865,000 women dropped out of the workforce last month, compared to only 216,000 men. The situation for Black women and men is moving from bad to worse, according to Washington Post analysis. How has the pandemic affected you financially? Have you lost your job, sought out safety net programs, maybe risked eviction or turned to family or friends for help? Explain what you're going through, what you're seeing out there in your industry. 800-642-1234. Heather Long is economics correspondent for The Washington Post. Heather, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Well, numbers, they can't tell the full story, but as of September, 2.4 million people have been out of work for at least 6 months or longer. What is your reporting telling you about where we are at now with the U.S. economy?
Right. So we're basically half recovered. And, you know, that's, you can look at that as a glass half full or glass half empty scenario. It's very good news for all the people who have gotten their jobs back in the last 6 months. But obviously, this was such a deep recession, such a huge crisis in the spring, that we still have, you know, over 10.7 million people who lost jobs in March and April and are not back. And what we spent a lot of time doing at the Post was analyzing who are those people who are in those 10.7 million. And that's where it's important to remember how deeply unequal this recession is. It has not hit people evenly. So to give an example, you were just speaking about moms versus mothers dropping out of the labor force in September. Moms of children ages 6 to 12 have only recovered about 45% of jobs versus dads of the same age, the sort of 6 to 12 early elementary years, are 70% recovered. So you can see these deep dichotomies in the economy.
There's also been talk of the K-shape recovery in suggesting that the wealthy are recovering and the lower earning people are not. What do you see there?
Yeah, the Washington Post was one of the first to write about the K-shaped recovery back in August, and it's certainly gotten more pronounced. Basically, what we're seeing is, in short, if you just look at employment, the recession is over for people who are fairly wealthy, so people in the top 25% of earners. It is a totally different scenario for people in the bottom half, particularly in the bottom 25% of earners. And on top of that, if anybody who's looked for a home or looked for a car recently knows, stock market's doing well, home values have hit an all-time high, and car sales, particularly used car sales, are doing very well. And so what you have, again, is people who have money, who've been able to keep their job. This is are basically fully recovered. For the bottom, they are still struggling to find work. Even people who are getting back to work in those service jobs aren't getting the tips that they used to or aren't earning as much as they used to. And it's basically still a pretty close to a depression-like scenario for those at the bottom.
And as I say, the stock market is not the economy. So, you know, Wall Street's fortunes don't really reflect the realities of what we're seeing on our main streets here in Wisconsin. Can you explain the disconnect that is going on as you see some industries recovering, maybe like, you know, I don't know, technology, but other parts of the economy like hospitality and food, restaurants, just really lagging?
Yeah, I mean, so we all kind of inherently understand what's going on here. It's really about how does the coronavirus impact those businesses? And obviously, the hospitality sector, anything, hotels, restaurants, we can all see them in our own neighborhoods, are barely half back. In some cases, they're restricted to still only a quarter of 25% capacity. Obviously, it's very difficult to break even, let alone make any money in that scenario, versus other industries like technology or Netflix, you know, companies like this that people are using the service, they're downloading it more, and people's lives have just come online. I think, too, with the stock market, the other thing, it's really a forward-looking, obviously, and so at the moment right now, the nation is clearly still in this deep crisis, particularly for these unemployed, over 10 million unemployed. But when people in the stock market look ahead, they're looking at 2021, and there is a belief that there will eventually be some sort of, be some sort of cure or be some sort of vaccine, of course. And the other weird thing is the stock market is really focused on these wealthy people who are recovered. And right now, rich people are saving a lot of money. They're not going on trips. They're not having exotic birthday parties. They're not spending as much as they normally do. And there's a belief that in 2021, wealthy people will be able to spend a lot of money again. Of course, that says nothing about folks in the bottom half of the income spectrum who I've been writing about and very concerned about. The downside for them is a lot of economists, including the Federal Reserve, do not think we will be back at full jobs or something close to pre-COVID levels until the end of 2023. So we're talking about at least 3 more years before a lot of people are back to something that feels like normal.
Very long. Talking with Washington Post economics correspondent Heather Long. She's our guide to the state of the economy, what the recovery is looking like, and who is being left behind with your situation as well. How has the pandemic affected your family? How has it affected you financially? How is your industry looking and the work that you do? Is there work to do? 800-642-1234. Heather, let's look at the HEROES Act and the latest $2.2 trillion stimulus on the table that hasn't moved any further toward a deal. What do you see there?
Right. So there's pretty big consensus, I'd say, across the aisle. Republicans and Democrats think that the first HEROES Act and the sort of series of bills that were passed in March and early April, that was more money. It was basically $4 trillion the government spent, more than we spent on the Iraq War, for instance. And a lot of people agree that that was necessary and that that helped. Those $1,200 checks went out to 160 million Americans. That's a lot of people to get money out the door to pretty quickly. The extra unemployment boost kept a lot of Americans from falling into poverty who had lost their jobs and was certainly much needed. The small business, the Paycheck Protection Program, it was obviously pretty chaotic at first in April trying to apply for that, but ultimately, several million businesses did receive that money. The problem is a lot of that aid ended at some point in August. And now we're sitting here 2 months into this. And that's where, as I call around to people, I'm hearing business owners, particularly restaurants, who say, look, I don't know if I'm going to make it without another sort of paycheck protection type loan. Certainly unemployed people, you just had a little bit of a segment on your program that utility shutoffs are happening. In some parts of America, evictions are still happening. And I just think about in our recent story, people like Natasha Smith, a laid off housekeeper at a casino in Louisiana. She told me, look, I only have 2 things left in my refrigerator, a pack of wings and a pack of thighs, and that's it. And she's a single mom, and her casino has decided to permanently close forever. It won't be reopening. And she said, I just call every day and apply for jobs, follow up with managers, and no one calls me back.
Washington Post economic correspondent Heather Long is describing the current state of the economy through her reporting. If you are out of work or furloughed, how do you spend your days? Have your state unemployment benefits come through? Are you still waiting for them? Are you able to pay for basic necessities? What can you say about the situation in the industry that you work in? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Heather Long right here on the Ideas Network. The coronavirus pandemic has been especially hard for women attempting to juggle work, to juggle school and childcare. We're looking at the economy here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin are trying to find common ground on the next stimulus. Here's Pelosi on CBS's Face the Nation responding to the airline industry part of the deal.
Well, we tried to get that done in the House, but the Republicans objected. But what I said to the airline executives in a public statement is, don't fire the people. You know that relief is on the way, so, and it will be retroactive.
Do you work in aviation, in hospitality, or in restaurants? What is your situation? Are you able to keep working? Join in 800-642-1234. Heather Long is economics correspondent at The Washington Post, and she's our guide. Heather, we heard there from Pelosi speaking directly to the aviation industry, and we've seen massive layoffs there. What are they trying to build into this next stimulus that might be able to help specific industries?
There's quite a lot. So they are closing in on a bill. The latest number I heard was around $1.8 trillion. So at the moment, the White House has pitched a $1.6 trillion package. And the House Democrats, you just heard House Leader Nancy Pelosi, has pitched a $2.2 trillion. So they're getting a lot closer than they've been in weeks. They agree on a lot of things. So just that clip you heard, they agree that airlines, which have just laid off or threatened to lay off close to 50,000 people this month, they agree that that sector needs help. They agree on another round of those very popular $1,200 stimulus checks. They agree on some sort of extra bonus, if you will, or extra money for the unemployed, which would be, they're sort of debating that. At the moment, the latest compromise looks like it'll be $400 or $500 a week instead of $600 like it was in the spring. They agree on more PPP money for small businesses. So there's a lot of agreement. They disagree. The two big holdups are the state and local aid. So the Democrats want a lot more money to go to cities and states. Republicans, at least the White House, has moved a little bit in that direction. The latest numbers are around $300 billion for that. House Democrats would like to see more like $500 billion or $600 billion. Actually, believe it or not, tax credits. There's a little bit of a debate around the child tax credit and whether that should be made more generous to be another way to help out families right now. But they're getting close. I tell people a week ago, I would have said there's a 30% chance of getting this done, so very little. Today, I would say there's probably a 70% chance. I think they will get it done in the next week, and Lord knows the economy needs it.
Well, let's look more specifically at reporting and number crunching that you did on people of color and what they are experiencing in this economy. Black Americans have not recovered anywhere near the same pace as white Americans. What are you seeing?
The numbers are staggering. When we look at jobs lost, Black men and women lost some of the most jobs in the spring because they work overwhelmingly in sectors in the service industry, particularly restaurants that were hit particularly hard. And the recovery has been much slower. Obviously, a lot of restaurants and hotels and service sector jobs are not back. We know that. So let me just throw out the numbers. Black men and women have recovered barely a third of jobs, so about 34%. White men and women, on the flip side, have recovered 60% of jobs. So it's just going much, much faster for some racial groups. Hispanics are sort of in between that, just slightly over half recovered, similar with Asian Americans. It also breaks down by college degrees. So people who have college degrees tend to work in jobs that they can sit here on their computer and work from home. People without college degrees who have high school education or less are much more likely to be in jobs where they need to go to a physical location, whether it's in manufacturing or in the service sector. People with college degrees have recovered 55% of jobs. People with high school degrees have recovered only 40% of jobs. So again, big disparities.
If you're just joining us, we're checking in on the health of the economy with Washington Post economics correspondent Heather Long. You can join in here. What are your feelings about the next stimulus check? Do you think it's needed and warranted? Do you want to see Congress take action on that? How could a second stimulus help your family or your business? 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Ryan now, joining us from DeSoto. Hi, Ryan.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing well. Go ahead.
So the first, my store, I work on Fort McCoy, which I don't know if you know is a National Guard training base, Army Reserve training base. And we closed for 2 months, which is right in the middle of spring and summer, which is busy.
Oh, Ryan, I think we're having difficulty hearing you, Ryan. We can hear you now.
Okay. So I work on Fort McCoy, which is a National Guard and Army Reserve training base. And we closed for 2 months in the middle of summer, which is our busiest time of year. And once we reopened, our sales just weren't there. Everybody was canceling training. Numbers for expected troops were changing every day. And now it's already gotten to the point where I know that we're going to finish in the red for the year, and I'm worried about having to go on furlough for the winter. Mm. Kind of to tie in what you said before, I think a stimulus bill is definitely needed.
Ryan, really interesting here. Heather, even on a military base, feeling the effects of this economy.
Yeah, I think Ryan's 100% right. And that's why he's saying just what the economists are telling Congress, which is there's a huge chance of what's called a double dip recession. I call it the W. And everybody's kind of said, what does this recession look like? Does it look like a V? It could look like a W. You know, yes, we've seen the worst of it. We've come back a little bit. We're half recovered now. But I think Ryan's right. There's a real potential that if the virus does come back in a big way, even if governors don't shut down states again a lot, we can see it in cell phone data. People get hesitant. As cases rise, people do not go out as much. People are not going to stores. They're not going to military bases. They're not signing up for trainings. And so that reverberates through the economy. And there's a very high chance of that happening in the winter. The head of the Federal Reserve has been telling Congress, it's going to be harder from here. Harder from here. And that's, it's almost like running the marathon. Now we're at the second half. Everybody knows who's been up Heartbreak Hill and Boston Marathon. That second half is killer.
Well, you've been looking at the unemployment rate of the swing states. Wisconsin economy has suffered. It shrunk by nearly a third from April to June. What do voters care about most when it comes to the economy?
Yeah, that's a great question. There is high worry about jobs, even if people have their jobs back. This recession has also been unusual in that we've seen a lot of pay cuts. And usually in like the Great Recession, most of us remember from just over a decade ago, people would either be laid off or they would be kept. But this time around, we're seeing a lot more what Ryan was just talking about, people getting furloughed, people getting a 10% across the board pay cut. And so there's still a high anxiety about the economy. And I was just looking at some polling data in Pennsylvania. I believe it's probably similar for Wisconsin, but the economy is rising back to being squarely as the number one issue on a lot of people's minds. What's interesting, I think, I'm originally from Pennsylvania and was recently there. The two linchpin swing states are supposed to be Pennsylvania and Wisconsin. Pennsylvania right now has a 10.3% unemployment rate, one of the worst in the nation. Wisconsin, on the flip side, has a 6.2% unemployment rate, which is one of the best, one of the lowest among states. So still high compared to a year ago, but it looks like a very different picture from the outside in those two states.
See how that translates then in November. Let's bring in Stephen in Black Earth. Hi, Stephen. What's your situation?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Good topic. My situation is that I'm a working professional and I work from home and I'm making more money. I feel a little guilty about it, but that's just there's a data point for you. My comment is that I think that we should all look at this and it shows and it proves that over the last 10 years or more, we've been replacing our engineering, manufacturing, and industrial economy with a service economy. And this shows that a service economy cannot replace an industrial economy. And a service economy is very, very fragile and subject to economic downturn. If we looked at the sectors rather than the race, look at the sectors of what's recovering, we'll see that certain industrial sectors are recovering much better.
Stephen, thanks. Heather, short on time, your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think Stephen makes a very good point. There's no doubt we have been transitioning people from blue-collar jobs into service jobs. That was a huge transition that was happening, particularly for minority workers and workers without college degrees coming out of the Great Recession. And he's absolutely right. We have just seen what a decimation of the service sector can mean. In our analysis, again, we looked, this is the most unequal recession in modern U.S. history, so since World War II.
Heather, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Heather Long is an economics correspondent for The Washington Post. Coming up, we check in with a Brown County emergency medicine physician about the surge of COVID cases, how his hospital is responding. That's right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Brown County is among health departments in the northeastern part of the state in recent days to issue a public health emergency alert due to the rapid spread of COVID-19 cases and rising hospitalizations and deaths. We're zooming in on Brown County here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In a letter sent Friday, more than 200 doctors urged residents and elected officials to take steps to contain the explosion of cases in the county that is pushing local hospitals to the brink. Are you a healthcare worker in Green Bay or the Fox Valley? What are you facing? Does your facility have enough PPE? Do you feel safe at work? We're at 800-642-1234. Dr. Paul Casey is an emergency medicine specialist in Green Bay and the medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services. Dr. Casey, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Well, what does the situation look like in your ER now? What are you facing?
So I'll talk about the county as a whole, because we're all facing the same thing. I just got off a 7 o'clock. It's called the HERC, Hospital Emergency Response Council. The state is divided up into multiple regions. Our region includes Brown County. So we're all facing the same thing. In my particular hospital, our COVID unit is 100% full. Our COVID ICU is 100% over their capacity. And we have a five-stage surge contingency plan. Today, we're having to shift into red, which is crisis mode, which means we're having to limit elective surgeries because of the remarkable rise in COVID admissions over the past 3 weeks.
What is going on? What is causing this?
To be quite simple, a blatant disregard for following public safety measures. We thought we'd dodge the bullet. People had a desire to return to normalcy. We started to see an uptick, and particularly in the rural areas. The farther north one goes in Wisconsin, the less people believe this disease is real and that they could get it or a family member could get it. The trend we're seeing now is that people wanted to return to normalcy. They had a patient yesterday who was very sick, but not sick enough to be in the hospital. I said, "Where did you get it?" And she said, "Well, I went out to dinner with seven friends. Six of us got it." There are large gatherings, county fairs, that type thing. Nobody wears a mask. In one county, Shawano County, which is the adjacent county to Brown County, there's been remarkable public resistance to wearing a mask because they say it infringes on their constitutional rights, and public health be damned, we're going to do whatever we want. That's what's driving this remarkable surge.
When you say you're moving to red crisis mode, what does that mean for staff? How does that crisis mode work?
So what it means is we have to look at our normal hospital operations. And, for example, we until last week, or actually until today, we had still been doing all of our elective surgeries because we have to take care of people who, for example, you have cancer, you need the cancer surgery. We can't stop taking care of those people. On the other hand, if you have a hip that's worn out and need a hip replacement, that's not an emergency. So we're having to look at postponing those surgeries to accommodate COVID patients. So that's what crisis mode means. It means we stop taking care of our usual patients. We had to do this in the first wave back in March and April. We essentially shut down everything in anticipation of seeing, we plan to have 50 patients on a ventilator in my hospital, which has 160 beds, because we saw what was happening in New York City and New Orleans, and we thought that was going to come to us. Fortunately, we dodged a bullet. The maximum number of patients we had in April in our hospital was COVID was 20. Today, we're double that at 40. In addition to taking care of everybody else who needs to come to the hospital, heart attacks, trauma victims, that type thing. So that's what crisis mode means. It means we have to suspend normal operations to accommodate critically ill patients.
How safe are healthcare workers staying? I've learned here that there's been a pretty big exposure that 150 Belen employees are out of work in quarantine, according to the Green Bay Press Gazette.
Actually, today it's 190. 190 today. So those are all exposures outside the hospital. The hospital is probably one of the safest places to be because we wear PPE. We have adequate PPE. We're protected. I've been wearing a surgical mask and an N95 when I see a COVID patient for 6 months, and I have not gotten infected on the job. So the exposure to healthcare workers is occurring outside the workplace. And unfortunately, if they're exposed or get the virus, they're off work. And that's the other part of the problem that, even if we have hospital beds, we need to be able to staff those beds to take care of our patients. And to have 190 workers home on quarantine is alarming.
We're talking with Dr. Paul Casey, who is an emergency medicine specialist in Green Bay for Belen Health Emergency Services. We're finding out how his county, his hospital, is responding to the surge in COVID patients. Taking your questions as well, do you live in the Fox Valley region? Are you wearing masks? Do you feel safe as COVID cases continue to rise? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. You have a outpatient respiratory clinic. What does that currently look like in terms of people using the clinic?
We are directing patients there in an attempt to cohort patients with respiratory symptoms. A couple reasons for that. Number one, it limits the number of staff we expose to respiratory illness, and it allows us to rapidly evaluate those patients and get them to emergency department if they need a higher level of care. So we're trying to do that, and all health systems in Brown County, I believe, are doing the same thing. We're trying to cohort those patients in a single location to, for example, you don't want a patient with COVID coming and sitting in the waiting room of a regular clinic where people are coming in for their routine health care, which we absolutely do not want to have to limit during this spike. We want to continue normal operations. During the first spike, what we saw was people couldn't come in for the routine screenings, their mammograms, their colonoscopies, and we can't do that again because we have to take care of the population.
Where are you at with ventilators? Because when we spoke with you 6 months ago, you were really concerned about the use of ventilators in treating COVID patients. Has that changed at all?
It actually has changed remarkably. So early on in the pandemic, we thought we were going to need a lot of ventilators, and it turns out putting people on a ventilator with severe COVID pneumonia is the wrong thing to do. This is a different disease than other respiratory illnesses, so what we've always done in emergency departments and ICU settings for people who have a low oxygen level, we put them on it's called a non-rebreather mask, and we dial that up to 15 liters a minute. And if their oxygen level stays low, that's the point you intubate them or put them on a ventilator. So that was done. All those images you saw in the first wave of the pandemic, that's why that was happening. It turned out that putting somebody on a ventilator, actually worsened their course of illness. So we've learned that we have other means to take care of the oxygen requirements, including something called high-flow nasal cannula. You can put somebody on a high-flow device, dial it up to 60 liters a minute, and that is more effective than putting somebody on a ventilator. So the number of ventilators we need is very small, and we have enough capacity to handle ventilator patients. Those patients are at the last stage of their disease, and most of them don't survive.
We've seen a number of experimental treatments here, especially in treating President Trump's COVID-19 regimen. Where are you at with the experimental treatments, the antibody cocktails, the remdesivir?
So we have three treatments that we use on hospitalized COVID patients. We have dexamethasone, which was shown in a very large trial called the Recovery Trial done at Oxford University, to improve the outcome in patients who have an oxygen requirement. So that's proven. We have another drug called remdesivir, which we're using under emergency use authorization. It's an antiviral medication. That's shown to have benefit as well. The third thing we have available to everybody is called convalescent plasma. That means we take a patient who's had COVID, they give blood, we concentrate the plasma, which contains antibodies against the coronavirus. What President Trump received the concept is you manufacture the antibodies that are identical to what you'd have in convalescent plasma, and you give those antibodies. That's called a monoclonal antibody. What the president received is not available to anybody else in the country. He had to get what's called a compassionate use authorization, typically used for people who are on the cancer patient. There's a drug that just started being tested for a particular condition. That particular drug that he received, if I understand correctly, is in phase one clinical trials, which means you're doing what's called a randomized double-blind study, where you take 50% of the population, you give them the experimental treatment, you give the other half placebo. The patient or the physician doesn't know which one they get, and then you measure the outcome. Did more people who received the experimental drug have a better outcome than the placebo patients? And that's the science we need to effectively say this drug works for this disease. That's why we stopped using hydroxychloroquine. Back in early part of the pandemic in March and April, we were giving people hydroxychloroquine, even on an emergency use authorization. And then a number of randomized trials came out that showed it absolutely doesn't work. So we stopped using it. The FDA withdrew their emergency use authorization.
We're talking with emergency medicine specialist Paul Casey. He's medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services in Green Bay. Have you been treated at a hospital recently? What safety precautions did you find in place? How has COVID affected your family, your community? How is your business or industry responding to the spread? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll get back to this in a minute with Dr. Paul Casey here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with Green Bay emergency medicine physician Paul Casey. According to the Department of Health Services, Brown County has had 10,482 COVID cases since the pandemic started, including 69 deaths. The virus has infected 4% of Brown County's population at this point, and hospitals are at a tipping point. Let's bring in Jennifer now in Appleton. Hi, Jennifer. What's your question?
Good morning. Thank you for this program. My question regards non-emergency medical appointments in the Fox Valley, like a physical examination. Would the doctor recommend that people who have non-emergency medical appointments, like physical exams, scheduled, that they perhaps postpone them later, or if he recommends that it's safe to go ahead with the physical exam, what are the precautions he would recommend for the healthcare workers and the facility in which the people have to go in for these exams?
Jennifer, thank you. Yeah. Dr. Casey.
So currently, we're at all major health systems. I'm currently working at ThetaCare Medical Center out in Shawano. I, in addition to working for Bell, and I work for the ThetaCare system. So all healthcare systems are continuing normal operations on the outpatient basis. It's completely safe to go in for a doctor appointment because, as I mentioned earlier, we're cohorting the COVID patients. We have capacity. All our clinics are open in most health systems in the state. So if you have, I have a doctor's appointment tomorrow, I'm going. The key is that you have to wear a mask and the healthcare providers in the clinic have to wear a mask. So it's currently safe to go in for routine schedule appointments. And we encourage people to do that.
Jennifer, thank you for that call. Let's bring in someone from now, the Fox Valley. Go ahead.
Oh, yes. My wife and I took all precautions. We sanitized. We wore masks. We social distanced. We both still had it and been down for a couple of weeks. We both got a minor symptom, but enough where it was the fatigue and total loss of smell type of thing. So we don't want to reveal who we are because of the HIPAA laws. But the other thing is there's so little testing in the Fox Valley. And the government website to tell you where testing is has a lot of broken links in it. So it hit here, and we weren't ready for it. And I'd like to have that addressed so that when these things do happen, that the government and the local medical facilities are better prepared. So I would look for a testing set. I would have had to drive, you know, about 40 minutes in any direction to go. And, you know, I live in the Fox Valley. There should be more of them, like in Appleton, Little Chute, Menashaw, that type of thing. Just were nothing in any of those places. One in Nina and one in, like, DePere, and that was it. So I'll take my comments here.
Yeah. Dr. Casey, the need for testing and available testing close by.
So a huge problem. On my call that I referenced earlier, it's called the HERT call, Hospital Emergency Response Council. We talked about that this morning. We're not getting the testing supplies we need from the federal government. So this has been elevated to the state level for our state representatives to push the government to give us the testing we need.
When you look at the percent of confirmed COVID-19 cases by age group, a quarter of cases, 25%, are age 20 to 29. I'm wondering, is this the age group that is presenting in your ERs?
Absolutely not. Those people, they usually don't even get sick, but they go home and they infect their parents and grandparents who then get very, very sick. And so I have not admitted a patient under the age of 30. Early on in the pandemic in March, we had one woman who was 29 who was pregnant, who unfortunately died from COVID. But the vast majority of young people, they either get very mild symptoms or no symptoms at all. The problem is they take it home to family. And that's the current theme we're seeing. The daily report I get about people who are admitted, we try to determine the contact they had that gave them the disease. And that's almost always the case during our current huge spike. A family member visited, they think, my grandson's coming to visit. No big deal. I know him. He's been safe. He didn't wear a mask and gives it to grandma. Grandma has to be hospitalized.
We're talking with emergency medicine physician Paul Casey. He's medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services in Green Bay, also working with the ThetaCare system. Dr. Casey, you mentioned contact tracing. Do you find that there is enough contact tracing to go around in your region? What do you see?
No, that was addressed on the 7 o'clock meeting today. Brown County Public Health doesn't have the capability to do adequate contact tracing. So what they have to do as of today, they try to contact the patient who tests positive and then ask that person to notify all their contacts. So we do not have adequate contact tracing capability.
So basically they're farming out that job to the person who's been infected?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I want to talk about the nursing staff here for a moment. At Bellin, they sent out a message a week ago saying, we pride ourselves on the quality of care we provide. We thrive on it. It keeps us going when things are tough, and being overwhelmed with critically ill COVID patients will take away our ability to provide this high level of care. What is morale like on your staff?
Unfortunately, it's dropping. I worked at Bellin over the weekend, and I had a hallway conversation with our nursing supervisor who mentioned to me that the people in the ICU and on the COVID ward they're getting fatigued. It's hard to wear a PAPR, which is a protective device, for 12 hours. Your eyes dry out. You can't eat or drink very often. So people are getting fatigued, and we're not even at the height of this current wave. So it's a problem. We're doing everything we can as a health system to support them, to try to keep morale up, but people are getting fatigued.
Let's bring in Greg now, joining us from Fond du Lac. Greg, hi.
Hi. I just have a question because a number of school districts decided to open up the schools this year, and I'm wondering if there's any kind of correlation where there's a conduit of kids coming to school and an increase in those areas where schools are open versus the ones that decided to remain shut down and do total virtual.
You know, we don't think that the schools have been a big conduit for the community spread. There have been a handful of cases. We did have an unfortunate case where a teacher in the Howard Suamico School District died from COVID, but it was believed that she contracted that at a funeral. The problem is that kids can transmit the virus. And the Howard Suamico School District actually did a fantastic job. We worked with them to develop a plan to keep their students masked, socially distanced, and the ones that did open up took proper precautions, but because of the increase in community spread, they've had to close down again.
Well, let's take our last minute or so to, remind us what we can do to help reduce the spread. It's mask wearing, but it goes beyond that as well.
Right. So I think the biggest thing people need to understand is that everyone can get this disease. And just because your sister, who doesn't live in your house, doesn't have any symptoms, it's not safe to go out to lunch with your sister and sit without a mask across the table because she could have it. That's the biggest thing we're seeing, is that people think, I don't have any symptoms, so I don't have to worry about this. The mask is the single most important thing we can do to help stop the spread of this virus. And we have to do that even when connecting with close family and close friends. An example is we had two nurses carpooling, and neither one of them had symptoms, so neither one of them wore a mask. One was asymptomatic and gave it to the other one. Now we have two nurses on quarantine. So that's the thing people need to understand, that somebody in your family or close social network cannot have COVID symptoms, have the virus, give it to you, and then you spread it to somebody else.
Dr. Casey, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks for helping us spread the message.
Dr. Paul Casey is an emergency medicine specialist in Green Bay, medical director for Bellin Health Emergency Services. Just ahead, we talk with two political reporters about President Trump's COVID-19 diagnosis and what they're hearing from his doctors and White House officials. And your reaction. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.